Awesome. I'm sorry, I'm an alcoholic. So tonight, thank you, Bill, for asking me to come tell my story. It's been probably, I'd say, a good year and a half or so since I've told my story. And I think there's always a reason for me and my wife, there's always a reason for every single thing that kind of ticks along. Anyway, I won't go into that yet. Anyway, thank you again very much. So tonight, the way I was told was to share my experience, strength, and hope with another alcoholic. And that's what I'll try to do to the best of my ability. I'm ridiculously honest. I'll try not to offend anybody. But, you know, it started pretty easily. I think I was born one day. my home life, I won't spend too much on my outside of the rooms, but my home life definitely sucked in the beginning. I had I called it a lifetime movie, where there was a lot of abuse, in every form. There was a parent who turned the other way because it was easier to look the other way than it was to just say, this is what's going on and we're going to address it. And, to say that did not form me would be a lie. I'm one of those people who's always, even when I was still drinking, you know, I was one of those people who just always said, I don't believe what you had in your past defines you. But I certainly would be a liar if I didn't say that didn't impress upon my actions and my behaviors growing up. I have a sister who's older than I am, who's an alcoholic. I have a father who's deceased, who's an alcoholic. I have a brother who's older than I am, who's an alcoholic. In my family, in my case, there's such a strong genetic link. I can go to my grandparents and great-grandparents. It doesn't matter. The reality is we're all alcoholics. I'm really grateful that my sister is sober. She is not one of us. She chooses to do her own thing, and that's okay for her. What she's trying didn't work for me. I'm I'm a particular kind of batshit crazy, that, for lack of better words, for me, nothing but a spiritual experience, as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and 12 and 12 and the other literature, nothing but that worked for me to keep me kind of down to the earth. Not always, but kind of. You know, my life was just, growing up, it just seemed like I was always looking, and I'm not sure what I was always looking for, but there was always something lacking to me, and I always knew there was something missing. It was always, for me, looking on the outside in. I didn't have the right clothes or the right house, or I wasn't pretty enough, or I wasn't smart enough, or I wasn't funny enough. There was something that I wasn't enough all along the way. For me, my alcoholism, and I suffer from that ism. The ism to me is the spiritual part of it. I mean, I'm going to absolutely, you know, just abuse and take to excess anything. For me, the ism really kicked in when I was 9, and it started with food. And that's when you talk to people about, did the abuse, you know, did that spur you on or whatever? It really doesn't matter. What 9-year-old starts abusing food and controlling it? That was my way of grabbing onto the ism early on. The next ism that I grabbed onto was alcohol when I was 11. And that day, I'll never forget, I sat at Beth's, my neighbor's kitchen table, and her older sisters were there. And they all said, if you ever want to get really drunk, really fast, I'm not kidding, to an 11-year-old, drink vodka on an empty stomach. And I was like, yeah. I mean, that's what kind of sick-ass alcoholic I was. Before I had even had a sip, I was like, hell yeah, let's go. And that's always been my mindset, just like full out, you know, balls to the wall, let's just go. All day long, let's go. And it was always into an excess. It was always to an excess. And that first day that I had that drink, Beth is one of us also, my friend who I was sitting with that day, who's not in the rooms anymore, has been in and out of the program for 15 years. But, God, that's so sad. I'm so grateful I'm here. But she didn't even have that same experience. She was like, yeah, well, we'll do it again. I was like, when? Let's plan this. When? Are we going to do it? And it was always when. Now, growing up in a family with alcoholism, I had the, now Sarah, you shouldn't drink.
Okay.
You know, this is when I was a kid.
Okay.
You really need to stay away from drugs, too, because you've got a higher marker for addiction.
Okay.
There was never a doubt in my mind I wasn't going to do what was in front of me. And I did not discriminate. If it was there and it was going to alter my state of mind, I wanted it. There was no, for me, my story includes other substances. Whatever was there, I wanted it. And I wanted more. There was never a time I didn't want more. And this has started, I'm not kidding, from 11 years old. I wanted more. When I was 15, this was, you know, we have those times in our life, right, where we have the befores and then the afters. This is a before and an after for me. My best friend, when I was 15, died drunk driving. I was supposed to be there with him that night, and I was home. My mom got mad at me. So I was home with her, and he died that night drunk driving. And the next day, I went to my mom. I had had it. So how many years is that? 3 years of drinking and using other substances. I was tapped out. I knew my life was a total shitstorm. There's no doubt about it. I don't know how I was still maintaining grades. I was waking up at 13, not knowing where the hell I was. Not knowing where I was at 13. Not knowing what happened to me. What didn't happen to me. And so I went to my mom and said, I need help, you know. I went into treatment. And for me, that's what I needed at the time. I needed that at the time. I went into treatment. I stayed sober for about a year and a half. Ended up moving in the process. And I became quickly moved from here down to St. Simon's. My aunt got cancer. And I quickly became the new girl from Atlanta who doesn't drink. When you're 16 years old and you move to a small town, that's the last thing you want to be. So I took it and I wore it like a badge. I really did. And I was very involved with the treatment center down Chartered by the Sea down there, and did a lot of work down there, and met a lot of great, amazing people. And then one day I discovered my best thinking. I decided that I was too young to really be an alcoholic, right? At the time, I was 17. I was still in high school. And I was so sick of being the girl who didn't drink. I really was. And as stupid as it sounds, I was. Now, what's important for me to say in the meantime is, for this year and a half I was sober, I still was the excess. You know, I was still with the food, still with shopping, with men, with anything. If I can take it to an excess to make me feel better for 30 seconds at a time, I'm going for it. And that's me. Again, you know, I'm balls to the wall. It is what it is. This is X. I want Y. How do I get there? And that's the way I lived. At that age, it still blows my mind. So I took a drink, in a pool. I'll never forget where. Took a drink in a pool. My hands were shaking. I had one beer, and I was like, fuck yeah, I'm back. And I knew within a couple of months, probably within 4, 5, 6 months, that I was in bad shape again. And I was okay with it. I was okay with the fact that I was in bad shape. And that's my screwed up work thinking. One thing that I've learned in the program is that it's really such an issue with the way my brain thinks. It's obviously I've got the physical allergy where the second I ingest any kind of chemical substance, my body wants more. And I'm not going to stop. My biggest issue is the way that I think. And the way that I've always thought is, I am not enough. What do I need to make me better than? What do I need to make me feel good? It was always about me. It was always about me. I didn't realize it was always about me until I got sober. And we started working a program. I take that back. Not drinking for me is not enough. I have to figure out how to work a program so I can get sober, figure out this whole spiritual malady stuff. Anyway, so within that first, you know, those first few months, I knew I was done and I was okay with it. I decided when I was 20, moving back to Atlanta, was going to make things better. Because I didn't feel good. I was tired of being on St. Simon's and tired of working and tired of sitting at bars by myself drinking. And I literally did sit by myself at bars drinking. And the manager, I was tired of the managers giving me alcohol and, oh, my God. And I was tired of living with my mom. Well, jackass, get a job that pays more and move out. You know, it might do something for you. I don't know. So I moved back to Atlanta. Went to school. And then I met a guy. And this guy, he's a decent guy. He really is. He was when we met. He really is. I really was tired of making it work by myself. And I had to pay a lot of very grown-up bills when I was in high school because there was not enough money to go around. And I was really sick of making it work by myself. I wanted somebody to help me. So I met this guy over alcohol, shocker, and I manipulated him within 6 months into moving in with me. And I say that, I have to be careful about that. I did manipulate him. Obviously, he was a willing participant, but I certainly, I knew what I was doing. I could feel it in my chest. Now I know that's my ego. When I feel it rise, I know that's my ego. But at the time, the only thing I can think of was, this, I just needed this. I needed to be with him. And if I could just get him to be with me, then everything would be okay. Well, I was the cute, drunk, you know, fiancé for a long time. And I played that role well. That worked for a very long time. Get married. Still feel like shit. Shocker. All these things I thought were going to fulfill me, I've tried food, I've tried sex, I've tried shopping, I've tried money, I've tried anything I can get my hands on, and nothing is fulfilling me. I'm going to get married. So, and I put on my best grown-up shoes I could find, and I said, yes. And I started a great career, and I still wasn't happy. And I'm not drinking every day at this point, and I'm not using other substances every day at this point. But every time I did, it always was until it was gone, and if it was gone, I was going to get up and get more, or I was passed out. And for me, that's always been my story. It's always been until it's been gone, or I pass out. Always. Always. Since 11. So this guy and I, right, I decide what needs to happen next is I'm going to have a kid, and that'll make me happy. Damn. She's a cool kid, too. She just turned 14. Kylie, she's a cool kid. That didn't work. You know, big surprise it didn't work. And big surprise I couldn't stay sober when I was pregnant with her. You know, for me, this is part of my story as a woman, as a mother. I could not abstain from substances in my pregnancies. It was always all about me. No matter what, it was always all about me. If I had a rough day at work, it didn't matter. I had a six-month-old baby inside of me. I needed, the doctor said I could have some wine. Yeah, not like two bottles. That's probably not a good idea. Grace of God thing, for real, she was okay. She's totally normal. She's 13 in eighth grade and taking high school level classes. And she's a cool kid. She's witty. Sarcastic, and she's smart, and she knows who she is, and she, I look at her, and she's who I wanted to be growing up. She's sure of who she is, and she doesn't make apologies for it. And so when I look at things, like what I mentioned earlier, that's a God thing. I had no hand in that. I did everything I could to fuck it up. I really did. I had no hand in that. But for some reason, my God, my higher power, I choose to call God, bestowed upon me this beautiful gift. And it still wasn't enough. I still wanted more. And I played the good mom, you know. I did the Christian preschool, and I did the stay-at-home, and I did all the... But I was the one, and again, my story, I'm using other substances until carpool at 1, because you can't go to the Christian preschool with alcohol in your breath at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They kind of frown upon that. And that was me. It quickly became not enough again, so I decided to have another child. Because again, and I'm going to keep saying this, it was all about me. It was all about me. And I thought another child would make me better, would make me feel better, would make me feel like what was missing was going to be okay. It was there. It was going to be there. And that kid, I screwed him up. He came out, both of my kids were early. Emma was 3 weeks early. Jack was almost 5 weeks early. But they thought I was the best mother in the world, so they never tested me for anything, ever, ever, ever. Jack came out of the womb. Of course, they all cried, but he was a different kind of cry. He had a shrill shriek. His legs shook uncontrollably. I don't tell this story very often. I knew what was wrong, and I couldn't tell anybody because it was about me. Somebody would find out who I am, what a piece of shit I really was, and then it's all going to be gone. Zach is still kind of sort of managing my life, right? Trying to anyway. And if I told anybody, hey, listen, kid, you're more important than I am. Please take this child from me because I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I didn't have it in me to do that. I didn't love him enough to do that. I loved me more. I never thought that I loved me more, but I did. He ended up in neurologist's offices with seizures. And I always manipulated them into thinking that it was something other than what it was. And because that's the kind of alcoholic I am. I will do anything I can to take anything off of me and put it on you. Because if it's on you, man, I'm out. I don't have to deal with it. I'm out. But if it's on you, homie, this is what you need to do to make life better. That's the kind of alcoholic I was. And they call, you know, with it's so funny, Polly Pistol. If you haven't heard her story, look it up. It's fantastic. I'll never forget one time I've seen her tell her story multiple times, and she said that the thing about, she said I was never an active alcoholism when I was drinking, when I was a mother, and I, what are you talking about? She said, because I was never very active. I was always on the couch. Which I was like, yeah, sounds about right. And that was it for me. You know, Jack, my youngest, he is, I'll back up. Both of these children love me more than any parent ever deserves. They are more proud of me for the fact that I've been sober for just over 4 years than any parent ever deserves. Jack in particular and I, he's my man. And he's the youngest, he's the boy. But he's the kind of person who gets it. He just gets it. And he'll say things like, he'll come over to me and just touch me and say, it's okay, mommy, I love you. Out of nowhere. When you're like, hey, what the fuck? How do you know? What is this? He's just that cool kind of kid. They're both really amazing kids. I decided, I don't even know what year it was. 2010, 2009. I decided if I was divorced, that would be good. And he really is, he's an ass. He really is, you know. There's documented abuse there. He's an ass. But here it is again, right? I put it on him. He's an ass. He abused me. He's the one who did this. He was negligent. He's the one who did this. The reality was, he was picking my face up off of tables. He was carrying me places when I could not walk. I could go on and on and on. We divorced. Things were actually okay. But then my life got hard again. So I needed somebody to rescue me. And I knew, and during this time, my drinking is more excessive. I'm sleeping maybe 2 or 3 hours a night. And the funny thing is, my ego is fantastic in there, because my ego is like, hey, you got this, girl. I mean, seriously, you got this, girl. And I'm sleeping for like 2 or 3 hours a night. What is this? And I'm going to work the next day, and working with patients, and these patients looking like, yeah, okay. It's not the first time it's happened. Hopefully it's the last. But anyway, it's crazy. So I decided I needed this this ex-husband back that I was tired of doing it. I was tired of doing it alone. I was tired of feeling that I needed more. I was tired of it. And so I conned him into remarrying me. It was real easy. And and really freaking sick, too. The last, I want to say, 7 years of my drinking, they were just nasty. They were ugly. It was the constant game. How can I make it look like I got it? I don't got it. How can I make it look like I got it? How can I make it your fault so you feel sorry for me and somebody else feels sorry for me? And how can I get more of what I feel like I need to feel okay? And it's funny, the day I remarried him. Yeah, so I was separated for a year, divorced for a year, remarried the same man. This cracks me up, the insane thinking. Like, what the hell? But that was my normal sane thinking. Within a couple of years, I was done. I was tapped out. I had lost multiple jobs for my alcoholism, and I always blamed it on you know, the offices, or the office manager didn't like me, or the doctor, and didn't they know who I was? I truly believed that, and how much I bring to the situation. And it was never, hey, dipshit, you know, you come in and you're passing out when you're working on patients. I would nod off working on patients. I'm not kidding. I would nod off working on patients. And then I would look up real quick and see, did anybody see me? I got it. I would play a little, like, what is it? Whack-a-mole, like, put my head walking around. So I decided one night, and this is a crazy thing. Obviously, I'm the kind of mom who's going to drink and use substances when I'm pregnant, when I'm nursing. I'm also going to do it when I'm driving my kids. So I had started to go back to meetings, right? Like I had when I was a kid, when I was 15. So I started to go back to meetings. And then one night, I hear to myself as I'm driving my son drunk, like this, it's only 3 more miles, Sarah. You got this. Isn't that funny? You got it. I don't got it. Like this, multiple car accidents, being pulled over, being basically arrested and then let go. Nothing was ever enough to make me stop. Except this one night, I have had God moments in my life that I have always used the word God. I didn't have religion truly in my life, and I still don't. That's my choice. My God is a very spiritual God. And I heard my God say, this isn't normal, Sarah. And I kept trying to block it out. Like leave me alone. I don't care. Just leave me alone. But I kept hearing for 48 hours, this isn't normal, this isn't normal, this isn't normal. When I woke up on that Sunday morning, I looked at my spouse and I said, I need to go to a meeting. And that's kind of the beginning of this road. It's pretty cool. Said, I need to go to a meeting. And he looked at me and was like, okay, you know, he didn't really think it was as big of a deal as I did. I had to look at him and say, what part of me drinking and getting high while I'm pregnant with your children, what part of that is normal to you? It's not really that bad, Sarah. Yeah, it is that bad. You know our kid? He was shaken. It's because of me. He still didn't get it. He still didn't get it. He thought it wasn't really that bad. My God. I knew it was that bad. So I go to this meeting, and I meet this woman there. I gave her my number, or she gave me her number, and she became my first sponsor. I called her 2 days later, and I said, or I text her, I said, I don't know if you remember me, but I met you the other night, this meeting, blah, blah, blah. I drank again. Will you please be my sponsor? Will you please meet me there? And she met me there. She didn't even know who the hell I was, y'all. I had to wave her down. Sarah, over here. and that's how she became my first sponsor. She was a very black and white woman, and I needed that. I needed somebody to say, listen, dummy, this is how you do it. And I didn't even start to really quote unquote get it for a while. It's interesting to me how much my willingness It's just all in how much pain I'm willing to tolerate, I think. For the first 3 months, I sat and I cried. I couldn't even talk. And then when I finally did start talking, then I started crying. But it was at 90 days for me of not drinking and just gritting my teeth and saying, okay, yes, let's do it. Okay, yeah. Hey, what do I got to do? Okay. 90 days is when I had it. I couldn't pretend anymore, and I just hurt so bad. I thought, I don't know what this God thing is. I truly had no idea what this God thing was, and I didn't care. All I knew was that I did not have anything left to lose. And that for me was one of those, I got goosebumps, before and after. I didn't have anything left to lose. And that's when I decided, okay, hey, maybe I need to start listening to what's really going on. Not just coming to the meetings. Not just saying, hi, but let me start listening to what's going on. And things started to unfold really quickly after that. It was pretty cool. When I started to get me out of the way, things started happening that I could not explain any other way than, damn, there's got to be something else out there. As I couldn't explain these wonderful things happening in my life, right? Wonderful things. Bad things happened to me. And these wonderful things were happening in my life. And I couldn't explain it any other way. Other than there's this God thing's got to be here. So after I finished, when I got to step 10, my sponsor said, I'm telling you, I was scared of her. So she said, okay, you're going to start raising your hand to sponsor people. I was like, no, I don't. I'm not going to. She said, yes, you are, Sarah. It's like, okay. So from then on, every single time, raise your hand. Okay. And I was so worried, right? I was going to mess somebody up or whatever. And then I realized it had very little to do with me. And that if I just shut up and got my own ego out of it, that God would present somebody to me when the time was right. So I started sponsoring pretty early on at less than a year. That's the thing. I'm not kidding. That's the thing that keeps me sober. The women that I work with. I still have a sponsor. I still have a home group. My sponsor is not the same who I started with. I got to a point where I felt like I needed to mix things up a little bit to grow further. And that was a hard decision. That was a lot of prayer and a lot of meditation for about 6-7 months on the same subject. And I needed to do that for my sobriety. It's the women, man, the women I sponsor, the women I work with. I've got one right now. She's who's kept me going for the last year. So when I was asked to share my story, it's been about a year and a half to 2 years of two of the worst years I've ever had in my life. On November 9th, 2012 is when I got sober. But the last 2 years have been the worst years of my life. I've lost multiple best friends, gone through, bankruptcy, divorce, still in the middle of the divorce part, multiple autoimmune disorder diagnoses, there are two different job losses. I mean, it's the kind of stuff where you're like, okay, how am I going to make it through this? Okay. And the thing is, I've been able to make it through going to meetings, staying in touch with my God and doing the best that I can on any given day. And you know, it's interesting. I got to read this because the bedevilments keep coming up for me personally. Everywhere I'm going, I'm hearing the bedevilments. So on page 52 of the big book, it says we are having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. I mean, that's who I was. You know, that's who I was. And it seems to me, the more that I stay centered in this book, the less I have been in this bit of the bedevilment. For the last 2 years, I have fought that tooth and nail. I have fought it tooth and nail. And my issue was, how many do I have? The issue right here is that I kept allowing my ego to get back into play. And I kept allowing myself to say, I got this, I got it, I got it. I didn't have it when I was drinking. I sure as hell don't have it now. But again, it takes me, you know, that hell of a lot of pain until I get to the point where I'm willing to say, hey, God, hey, maybe you know more than I do. I'm just going to go on a limb here and say that's probably true. It's crazy. Every time I've gotten to that point, life gets better. And then it gets better. And so I think Sarah's done a good job. Mm-hmm. It's all about Sarah. Sarah's done a good job. Sarah doesn't need to go to as many meetings because Sarah's working more. So Sarah's kids are more involved with more things. So I'm not going to as many meetings. Not doing what I know I need to do, you know? And when that happens, I become prey to the bedevilments. You know, as far as what keeps it now, to be honest, some days it's just gritting my teeth. Some days I sit all kumbaya and I'm full of meditation and prayer, and some days I feel like putting one foot in front of the other is the hardest thing in the world to do. But I have to continue to remind myself the reality is that I keep doing. You know, when I first got sober, I couldn't go more than 15 minutes at a time. People would say, take one day at a time. I was like, fuck that, I can't do that. I seriously, like, I can't take one day at a time, but I could do 15 minutes at a time. So I grit my teeth for 15 minutes, and I when I first got sober. And I do that today sometimes. If I feel like I just can't, if I can't do it, I do 15 minutes at a time. And usually after about 3 or 4 15 minutes, I'm like, damn, you dummy, you hurt. Why don't you pray? Okay. Takes me a couple times, I guess, to get hit on the head with a 2x4. You know, I'll bring this up and then come to an early close because I know I'm babbling. I've got this sponsee right now. God just works in such beautiful ways. And I've got this sponsee right now who has dealt with some heavy-duty life stuff. And just had her brother pass 2 days ago. And this woman picked up the phone and called me, and she's crying. And then she, okay. And I said, okay, well, you know what you need to do? And she said, tell me. I said, you get your ass to a meeting. And she said, okay. I said, you call me when you're done. I was at work. She said, okay. So she did. She did it. She said, okay, Sarah, you've never steered me wrong. What? Because I sit there and I'm like, man, I mess up left and right. I am not with my sponsor the way she is with me. She teaches me how to be a better sponsee. I suck at it. I really do. She teaches me how to be a better sober woman of AA when I don't want to be a sober woman or a strong sober woman AA. So my sponsor always says, what is a strong sober woman going to do? I'll be like, I don't care. And I think I've said that before, too. I don't care. But the funny thing is, this stuff kind of gets into your blood. I had a situation at work where everything was hitting the fan. Everything was hitting the fan. And I walked through a situation over a period of time, close to a month. I walked through it with grace and dignity. And it didn't hit me until a couple of weeks afterwards. I said, my God, I walked through this with grace and dignity. I behaved the way God would have had me behave. Dang. I mean, that felt, I was sure within myself. I ruffled feathers, and that was okay because I still behaved the way I knew my God would want me to behave. And multiple times in the big book, it says, you know, I've got a new employer. This employer is God. My job, my period, number one, no matter what, at the end of the day, my job is to be of maximum service to God and those about me, period. I'm getting goosebumps again because I'm a dork like that. And I own it. But for real, that's my job. And if I do that, and that's what I've learned through coming to AA, staying in the book, working with my sponsor, working with women, staying in other literature, and doing what I'm supposed to do, if I maintain that level, that this is my job, then I am okay no matter what. Same thing at work. I knew there was a good chance I could lose my job, and I thought, damn, I cannot behave in a manner any other than this. And that was hard. Oh my God, I might lose my livelihood. I'm the only one with a job right now in my living situation. And I thought, I can't do that. But I maintained what I knew I needed to do. God, I knew I needed to do it. And this is the neat thing. I don't feel like this is really neat for me. I don't feel like it's all about me anymore. If I maintain that to be a master of service to God and those about me, it's not all about me. And when I make it about me, I can feel it. It sits right here real heavy, and it's my ego, and it tells me I got this. You're better than that, Sarah. You don't need that. You can do this. You've learned enough by now. You don't need to do that. That's when it becomes about me. And if it starts to become about me, I'm screwed. I know where that leads me. That leads me, I'm not even going to go through the list. I just share the list. That leads me to nothing. It's all about me. Absolutely nothing. I take that back. That leads me to me. And that's the last person. When I get sick like that, when I get spiritually sick like that, it's the last person I want to be around is me. No doubt. Anyway, thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate you asking me to share my story. That's it.